down the trail through the hillside of blackberry vines full of ripening berries, leading the rest with the wolf at her heel. She had signaled the animal to stay close, and he seemed to prefer it. With so many people, Wolf was feeling protective of her, and she didn't want the large carnivore to alarm anyone, although most of the Ninth Cave were getting quite used to him. They loved the reaction he caused in the rest of the people at the meeting and the inevitable attention they received because of him. At the bottom, she turned toward the dry stream bed. When they arrived, they first saw the remains of her fire, but soon noticed the hole cut through the thick, woody, running vines. Rushamar, Soliban, and Tormadin immediately set to work enlarging the hole, while Jondalar quickly started a fire. They were all getting more curious about the cave, Jondalar in particular. Once they got a few torches lit, they all tromped toward the dark hole that had been cut through the greenery. Tormadin was very surprised. He could see it was a cave, but he'd had no idea it was there. They only used the back hillside when the berries were ripe. It was a huge wild berry patch that covered the entire hill and had been there as long as anyone knew. Just picking from the path, which was renewed every year, and from around the edges, provided more fruit than all of them could pick, even during a summer meeting. No one had bothered to hack their way in very far, or to cut through and find a cave.
"What made you decide to cut through the brambles here, Ayla?" Tormadin asked, as they started into the dark hole.
"Wolf did," she said, looking down at him. "He is the one who found it. I was out looking for something for a morning meal tomorrow, perhaps a hare or a grouse. Wolf often helps me hunt. He has a good nose. He disappeared behind this pile of rubble and under the vines, and was a long time coming out. I wondered what was there. I cut through and discovered it was a cave, then came out and lit a torch and went back in."
"I thought there had to be a reason," he said,
aware of both her unusual way of speaking and her. She was a beautiful woman, especially when she smiled. With Ayla and the wolf in the lead and Tormadin behind her, each holding a torch, they started into the opening one at a time. Zelandani and Jonakol were behind him, followed by Joharan, Marthona, and Jondalar. Ayla realized that the people had intuitively ranked themselves in the order that they used for very special or formal occasions, like a funeral, except that she had ended up in front, which made her a bit uneasy. She didn't think she deserved to be first in such a line. She waited until everyone was in the cave. The last one in was Lenoga carrying Lorela, daughters of Larimar's mate, Tremida, the family that was always last. She smiled at them and received a shy smile in return from Lenoga. Ayla was glad she had decided to come. Lorela was getting the rounded look that a baby of her age should have, and becoming more of a handful for her surrogate mother, but Lenoga seemed very pleased about it. She had taken to sitting with the young mothers of the cave and hearing them brag about their babies, had begun to talk a little about Lorela's accomplishments. "The floor is slippery, so be careful," Ayla said as she started out leading the group underground. With several torches, it was easier to see that the entrance gallery widened as the floor sloped down. She became aware of the cool dampness of the cave, the earthy smell of wet clay, a muffled sound of dripping water, and the breathing of the people behind her, but no one really spoke. The cave seemed to inspire silence, an expectant hush, even from the babies. When she felt the floor level out, she slowed and lowered her torch. The others did the same, watching their feet and where they were going. When all of them had reached the level area, Ayla lifted her torch and held it high. As the rest of them did the same, first there were involuntary sounds of surprise, oohs and ahs, and then stunned silence, as the people were truly overcome by the glorious white walls of crystallized calcite molded to the shape of the rock, shimmeringly alive in the torchlight. The beauty of the cave had nothing to do with stalactites. The cave had almost none, but the cave was beautiful, and more. It was filled with a powerful aura that was magical, supernatural, and spiritual.
"Oh, great Earth Mother," said the Zalandani who was first, "this is her sanctuary. This is her womb." Then she began to sing in her own gloriously rich and vibrant voice. "Out of the darkness, the chaos of time, the whirlwind gave birth to the Mother Sublime. She woke to herself, knowing life had great worth. The dark, empty void grieved the great Mother Earth. The Mother was lonely. She was the only." The walls resonated with her voice, creating a feeling of accompaniment. Then someone started playing a flute and actually did accompany her. Ayla looked to see who it was. A young man who was a stranger was making the music. Though he looked vaguely familiar, she knew he was not from the Ninth Cave. From his clothing, she recognized that he was Third Cave, and then she knew why he seemed to be someone she knew. He resembled the leader of the Third Cave, Manvalar. She tried to recall if she had met him, and the name Morazan came to mind. He was standing beside Ramila, the plump, attractive, brown-haired young woman who was one of Folara's friends. He must have been visiting their camp and came along with them. The people had joined in singing the mother's song, and they had reached a part that seemed especially profound. "When she was ready, her waters of birth brought back the green life to the cold, barren earth, and the tears of her loss abundantly spilled, made dewdrops that sparkled and rainbows that thrilled. Birth waters brought green, but her tears could be seen." With a thunderous roar, her stones split asunder, and from the great cave that opened deep under, she birthed once again from her cavernous room, and brought forth the children of earth from her womb. From the mother forlorn, more children were born. Each child was different. Some were large and some small. Some could walk and some fly. Some could swim and some crawl. But each form was perfect, each spirit complete. Each one was a model whose shape could repeat. The mother was willing. The green earth was filling. Suddenly, Ayla perceived a feeling that she'd had before, but not for a long time. A sense of foreboding came over her. Ever since the clan gathering, where Kreb had learned in some inexplicable way that she was different, she had sometimes felt this peculiar fear, this strange disorientation, as though he had changed her. She felt a tingling, a prickling, a goosebump-raising nausea and weakness, and she shivered as her memory of a darkness deeper than any cave became real. In the back of her throat, she tasted the dark, cool loam and growing fungus of ancient, primeval forests. An angry roar shattered the silence, and the watching people jumped back with fear. The huge cave bear pushed at the gate to the cage and sent it crashing to the ground. The maddened bear was loose. Braud was standing on his shoulders. Two other men were clinging to his fur. Suddenly one was in the monstrous animal's grip, but his agonized scream was cut short when a powerful bear hug snapped his spine. The Mogurs picked up the body and with solemn dignity carried it into a cave. Kreb, in his bearskin cloak, hobbled in the lead. Ayla stared at a white liquid sloshing in a cracked wooden bowl. She felt an anxious worry. She had done something wrong. There wasn't supposed to be any liquid left in the bowl. She held it to her lips and drained it. Her perspective changed. A white light was inside her, and she seemed to be growing larger and looking down from high above at stars, blazing a path. The stars changed to small flickering lights leading through a long, endless cave. Then a red light at the end grew large, filling her vision, and with a sinking, sickening feeling, she saw the Mogurs sitting in a circle, half hidden by stalagmite pillars. She was sinking deeper into a black abyss, petrified with fear. Suddenly Kreb was there with the flowing light inside her, helping her, supporting her, easing her fears.
He guided her on a strange trip back to their mutual beginnings, through salt water and painful gulps of air, loamy earth and high trees. Then they were on the ground, walking upright on two legs, walking a great distance, going west toward a great salty sea. They came to a steep wall that faced a river and a flat plain with a deep recess under a large overhanging section. It was the cave of an ancient ancestor of his. But as they approached the cave, Kreb began fading, leaving her. The scene grew hazy. Kreb was fading faster, was nearly gone. She scanned the landscape, searching desperately for him. Then she saw him at the top of the cliff, above his ancestor's cave, near a large boulder, a long, slightly flattened column of rock that tilted over the edge, as though frozen in place as it was about to fall. She called out, but he had faded into the rock. Ayla felt desolate. Kreb was gone, and she was alone. Then Jondalar appeared in his place. She sensed herself moving with great speed over strange worlds and felt the terror of the black void again, but it was different this time. She was sharing it with Mahmud, and the terror overcame both of them. Then, faintly, from far away, she heard Jondalar's voice, full of agonized fear and love, calling to her, pulling her back, and Mahmud as well. By the sheer strength of his love and his need, in an instant she was back, feeling chilled to the bone.
"Ayla, are you all right?" Zelandani said. "You're shivering." Chapter 27.
"I'm fine," Ayla said. "It's just cooling here. I should have brought something warmer."
Wolf, who had been exploring the new cave, had appeared at her side and was pushing against her leg. She reached down and felt his head, then kneeled down and hugged him.
"It's cool, and you are pregnant. You feel things more," Zelandani said, but she knew there was more to it than Ayla was saying. "You know about the meeting tomorrow, don't you?"
"Yes, Marthona told me. She will be coming with me since I have no mother of my own to come," Ayla said.
"Do you want her to come?"
"Oh, yes. I was grateful that she offered. I didn't want to be the only woman there without a mother, at least someone who is like a mother," Ayla said.
The first nodded.
"Good."
People were getting over their first feelings of awe at the new cave and were beginning to move around in it. Ayla saw Jondalar walking the length of the large room with purposeful strides and smiled. She knew that he used his body to measure. She had seen him do it before. The width of his clenched fist was one measurement, the length of his hand another. He used his open arms to gauge spaces, and he often paced off distances by naming his steps with the counting words. That was why she had started doing it. He looked into the gallery at the back, holding his torch high, but didn't enter. A cluster of people were watching him. Tormadon, the leader of the 19th cave, was talking to Morazan, the young man from the 3rd cave. They were the only two people who were not from the 9th cave. Willemar, Marthona, and Folara were standing next to Proliva and Joharan and his two closest advisers and their mates. Dark-haired Soliban and his pale blonde mate Ramara were talking to Rushamar and Salova, who was holding little Marsola on her hip. Ayla noticed that neither Proliva's son Geridol nor Ramara's son Robinan was with them, and guessed that the two boys who played together had gone off to do something at the main camp. Jonakol was smiling at Ayla as she walked toward them with Zelandani and the wolf. Jondalar came back and joined them.
"I would guess this room is the height of 3 tall men to the ceiling," he said, "and about the same or a little more across, about 6 of my strides. Probably the length is something short of 3 times that much, around 16 steps, but I have a long stride. The darker stone of the lower part of the walls comes to about here."
He held his hand about mid-chest height.
"That's about 5 of my feet, one after another."
Jondalar had judged the distances fairly well.
He was 6 feet 6 inches tall, and the white walls, which began at the middle of his chest, were around 5 feet up and went all the way to the 19-foot ceiling. The room was about 22 feet across and 55 feet in length, with some water pooled in the middle. The space was not large enough to hold everyone at the summer meeting, but more than enough to hold an entire cave, except perhaps the ninth, and certainly big enough for the entire Zelandanya. Jonakal walked to the middle of the room and stared up at the walls and ceiling with an entranced grin. He was in his element, lost in his imagination. He knew that these beautiful white walls hid something spectacular that wanted to come out. He wasn't in a hurry. Whatever was done with them had to be exactly right. He was beginning to get some ideas, but he needed to consult with the first, to meditate with the Zelandanya, to reach inside those spaces and find the imprint of the other world that the mother had left there. She had to tell him what was there.
"Should we explore those two passageways now, or come back later, Tormadon?" Joharan asked.
He wanted to go farther now, but felt that he should defer to the leader within whose territory the cave was.
"I'm sure some people of the 19th cave would like to see this cave and explore it deeper. Our Zelandani probably can't do anything very strenuous, but I'm sure her first acolyte would like to be involved. His kinship line has a wolf sign, and since it was a wolf that found this cave, he will be very interested,"
Tormadon said.
"Yes, the wolf found it, but if Ayla hadn't been curious enough to see where he had been, we still wouldn't know it was here,"
Joharan said. "I'm sure he'd be interested in any case," Zelandani said. "We all are, and all the Zelandanyi will be. This is a rare and sacred cave. The other world is very close here. I'm sure we all feel it. The 19th cave is very fortunate that it is so close to them, but I suspect that means you will be hosting more of the Zelandanya, and others, of course, who will want to make a pilgrimage to this spiritual place," the first said. She was making it clear that no one cave could lay claim to such a special find, even if it was within their understood territory. This place belonged to all of Earth's children. The 19th cave of the Zelandanyi only held it in trust for the rest.
"I think that a closer look is necessary, but there is no hurry," Jonakal said. "Now that we know it is here, it won't go away. No one knows how much is here or how deep this cave is. Any explorations should be carefully planned, or we could wait until someone is called to it."
Zelandani nodded slightly to herself. She understood more than he did himself that her first acolyte, who had wanted only to be an artist and didn't care if he ever became Zelandani, had found a reason to make the commitment. He wanted this cave. It claimed him. He wanted to know it, to explore it, to be called to it, and especially to paint it. He would find a way to move to the 19th cave so he could be closer to it. Not that he would actually plan it, but he would work toward it, because all his thoughts and dreams from now on would be of this cave. Then another thought came to her mind. Ayla knew it. From the moment she saw it, she knew this cave belonged to Jonakal. That's why she insisted that he had to see it, even if I didn't. She knew it would be more important for him than anyone else. She is Zelandani, whether she knows it or not, even whether she wants it or not, the old Mammut knew. Perhaps the magician of the people she grew up with, the one she calls Mogur, recognized it. She cannot avoid it. She was born to it, and she could replace Jonakal as my acolyte. But as he says, there is no hurry. Let her have her mating and her baby. Then she can start her training.
Of course, it would take some planning to explore all of it, but I'd like to take a closer look at that passageway at the back,
Jandalar said.
Wouldn't you, Tormadon? A couple of us could go back there and see where it goes.
And some people are ready to leave, Marthona said. It's cool in here, and no one brought warm clothes. I think I'll take a torch and start out, though I'm sure I'll want to come back.
I'll go too,
Zelandani said, and Ayla was shivering earlier.
I'm fine now, Ayla said. I'd like to see what's back there.
In the end, Jondalar, Joharan, Tormadin, Jonakol, Morazan, and Ayla, six of them, and Wolf, stayed to look a little deeper into the new and wonderful cave. The corridor at the back of the main room of the cave was almost directly opposite and along the axis of the entrance corridor. The entrance to the axial gallery was fairly symmetrical, wider and rounded at the top, narrowing down at the bottom. To Ayla, who had delivered babies and had examined many women, the opening was feminine, maternal, a wondrous evocation of the female organ. Though both were the same, it didn't so much put her in mind of the vagina, but the upper round part suggested the birth canal, narrowing to the lower extension of the anal region. She understood exactly what Zelandani meant when she said this was the womb of the mother, although all caves were considered an entrance to her womb. Once they went in, the winding passage continued to be narrow and difficult to negotiate, although the upper white walls widened out into a broadly curving archway. It wasn't very long, about the same length as the entrance gallery. When they reached the end, the walls opened out around a pillar of stone that gave the false impression that it supported something above. But in fact, it was short of reaching the ground by more than 20 inches. The passage went around the large stone shaft on the right side, making a sharp turn to the left, and meandering off a few more feet until it ended. At the place where it turned around the column, the surface of the floor dropped down about 3 feet, but it was a wide horizontal space that extended up 10 feet, making it one of the few really comfortable places to stand or sit and relax. Ayla took the opportunity and sat down to see how it looked from that position. She noticed that something could easily be stashed beneath the stone shaft out of the way. She also observed a low hole in the wall opposite the pillar into which one could put small things so they could be easily found again. She thought when she came again she would bring in something to sit on. Even a bundle of grass would keep her off the cold floor. After they worked their way back out of the gallery, they looked into the entrance of the other passageway that was to the right of it, but it was a smaller tunnel, which would require crawling up into it on hands and knees, and there were pools of water on the floor. They all decided to save exploring that place for another time. As they left the cave, Wolf went ahead with Jondalar and the two leaders, Joharan and Tormadin. Jonakol walked beside Ayla and stopped her with a question.
Did you ask Zelandani to invite me here?
After seeing what you did inside Fountain Rocks, I thought you ought to see this cave, she said. Or should it be called a deep?
Either one. When it gets named, it will be called a deep, but it's still a cave. Thank you for bringing me here, Ayla. I've never seen a more beautiful cave. I'm overwhelmed, Jonakol said.
Yes, I am too. But I'm curious, how will this cave get named? Who will name it? Ayla asked.
It will name itself. People will start referring to it in whatever way best describes it or feels most appropriate to them. What would you call it if you wanted to talk about it to someone? Jonakol asked.
I'm not sure. Maybe the cave with white walls? Ayla said.
I guess the name will turn out to be close to that, at least one of the names. But we don't know much more about it yet, and the Zelandania will make their own name, Jonakol said.
Ayla and Jonakol were the last ones out of the cave. The sun seemed especially bright when they reached the entrance, after the dark cave lit only by a few torches. When her eyes adjusted, Ayla was surprised to see Marthona waiting, along with Jondalar and Wolf.
Tormadin has invited us for a meal, Marthona said. He has hurried ahead to let them know to expect us. Actually, he invited you, but then he asked me to come too, and all the rest of you who were in the cave just now, including you, Jonakol. Everyone else has other things to do. Most people are busy at summer meetings.
I know Joharan is having a gather at our camp with people from all the other caves to plan the hunt,
Jandalar said. In fact, Tormadon will be going too after he introduces you to his camp. I was going to go, but it will still be going on after the meal, and I'll go later. It's not that I would usually be included in the planning of these things, but since we returned, Joharan has been getting me involved in them.
Why don't we all go to our camp? Ayla said. There is still a special meal to prepare for tomorrow morning, and I haven't helped at all.
For one thing, when the leader of the host cave at a summer meeting invites you for a meal, it's a courtesy to go, if you can.
Why would he invite me?
It's not every day one finds a cave like that, Ayla. All of us are excited about it, Marthona said. And it's close to the 19th cave, in their territory. They will probably become a more important cave now.
You'll be getting more attention, too, Jandalar said.
I get too much attention as it is, she said. I don't want all that attention. I just want to be mated and have a baby, and be like everyone else.
Jandalar smiled at her and put his arm around her. Give it some time, he said. You're still new. When people get used to you, things will settle down.
It's true. Things will settle down, but you know, you are never going to be like everyone else. For one thing, everyone else doesn't have horses and a wolf, Marthona said, looking down at the big carnivore with an ironic smile.
Are you sure they know we're coming, Mardina? The older woman said, stepping carefully across the small creek that emptied into the river. She invited us, Mother. She said come and share a morning meal with them, didn't she, Lanadar?
Yes, Grandma, she did, the boy said.
Why did they camp so far away? The grandmother asked. I don't know, Mother. Why don't you ask them when we get there? Mardina said. Well, they are the biggest cave and take a lot of room, the woman said. A lot of people were already here and had set up camps.
I think it's because of the horses, Lanadar said. She has them in a special place, so no one will think they're just regular horses and decide to hunt them. They would be easy to hunt. They don't run away.
Everybody is talking about them, but we were out when they came. Is it true the horses let people sit on their backs? The older woman said. Why would anyone want to sit on the back of a horse?
I didn't see that, but I don't doubt it, Lanadar said. The horses let me touch them. I was touching the young stallion, and the mare came and wanted me to touch her, too. They ate off my hands, both of them. She said I should feed both horses at the same time so they don't get jealous. She said the mare is the mother of the stallion, and she can tell him what to do.
Mardina slowed and knit her brow as they approached the campsite and watched people talking and smiling around the long trench fire. There seemed to be a lot of people. Maybe she was mistaken. Maybe they weren't expected.
There you are! We've been waiting for you!
The two women and the boy turned at the sound of the voice and saw a tall, attractive young woman.
You probably don't remember me. I'm Falara, daughter of Marthona.
Yes, you look like her, the older woman said.
I suppose I should offer a formal greeting, since I'm the first one to see you.
She held out both her hands to the older woman. Mardina watched as her mother stepped forward and took the young woman's hands.
I am Falara of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi, blessed of Dani, daughter of Marthona, former leader of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi, daughter of the Hearth of Willemar, master trader of the Zelandanyi, sister of Joharan, leader of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi, sister of Jandalar of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi, master flintknapper, and returned traveler, who is soon to be mated to Ayla of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi. She has a bunch of names and ties of her own, but the one I like best is Friend of Horses and Wolf. In the name of the Great Earth Mother Dani, you are welcome to the camp of the 9th cave.
In the name of Dani, the Great Mother, I greet you, Falara of the 9th cave of the Zelandanyi. I am Denoda of the 19th cave of the Zelandanyi, mother of Mardina of the 19th cave, and grandmother of Lanadar of the 19th cave, once mated to.
Folara has a lot of important names and ties, Mardina thought, as her mother began her recitation. She's not yet mated. I wonder what her kinship sign is. Then, as though her mother knew what she was thinking, as she finished her names and ties, the woman added,
"Wasn't Willemar, the man of your hearth, once of the 19th cave? I think we share a kinship sign. I am the bison."
"Yes, Willemar is the bison. Mother is the horse. I am too, of course."
Several people had gathered around in the course of the formal introduction. Ayla stepped forward and greeted Mardina and Lanadar, and then Willemar greeted Denoda in the name of the entire 9th cave. Names and ties could take all day if someone didn't cut it short. He finished by saying,
"I remember you, Denoda. You were a friend of my older sister, weren't you?"
"Yes," she said, smiling. "Do you ever see her, since she moved so far away? I haven't seen her in years."
"Sometimes I visit her cave when I go to the coast of the great waters of the west to trade for salt. She's a grandma. Her daughter has 3 children, and a granddam as well. Her son's mate has a boy."
A movement around Ayla's legs caught Mardina's attention.
"That's the wolf!"
she almost screamed in her fear.
"He won't hurt you, mother,"
Lanadar said, trying to calm her. He didn't want her to leave suddenly. Ayla bent down and put her arm around him.
"No, he won't hurt you, I promise," she said.
She could see the fear in the woman's eyes. Marthona stepped forward and greeted Denoda, much more informally, then said,
"The wolf lives in our lodge with us, and he likes to be greeted, too. Would you like to meet a wolf, Denoda?"
She had noticed that the older woman showed more interest than fear. She took her by the hand and led her toward Ayla and Wolf.
"Ayla, why don't you introduce him to our guests?"
"Wolves have good eyes, but they learn to recognize people with their noses. If you give him a chance to smell your hand, he will remember you later. That is his formal introduction,"
Ayla explained. The woman held out her hand and allowed the wolf to smell it.
"If you'd like to greet him, he likes to be stroked on the head."
Wolf looked up at Denoda as she lightly stroked his head, with his mouth open and his tongue lolling out the side. She smiled at him.
"He is a warm, living animal," she said.
She turned to her daughter.
"Come, Mardina, you should meet him, too. Very few people ever get to meet a wolf and walk away to tell about it."
"Do I have to?"
Mardina said. It was obvious that Mardina was uncommonly frightened, and Ayla knew Wolf would smell it. She held him firmly. He didn't always respond well to such evident fear.
"Since they offered, it's the polite thing to do, Mardina, and you'll never be able to visit again if you don't. You will be too afraid. You don't need to fear this wolf. You can see that no one else does, not even me. So why should you?"
Denoda said. Mardina looked around and saw the large crowd watching her. She thought it was probably the whole 9th cave, and none of them seemed to be afraid. She felt as though she were on trial, and was sure she'd be too humiliated to face any of them again if she didn't go close to that wolf. She looked at her son, the boy for whom she'd always felt mixed emotions. She loved him more than anything in her life, and she was embarrassed by him, by the fact that she gave birth to him.
"Go ahead, mother," he said. "I met him."
Finally, Mardina put one foot toward the woman and the wolf, and then another. When she reached them, Ayla took her hand, and holding it in hers, brought it to the wolf's nose. She could almost smell her fear, but the woman did overcome it and faced the animal. Ayla thought Wolf probably smelled her own hand more than Mardina's. Then she took the hand and led her to touch the fur on his head.
"Wolf fur can be a little rough, but you'll notice how smooth it is on his head,"
Ayla said, letting go of her hand. Mardina kept it there a moment longer before pulling it away.
"See, that wasn't so bad, was it?" Denoda said. "Sometimes you make more of things than you need to, Mardina. Come and have some hot tea. It's a mixture that Ayla makes, and it's quite good," Marthona said. "We decided to make an occasion of your visit, and cooked everything in a roasting pit, We're almost ready to take it out."
Ayla was walking with Mardina and Lanadar.
"That's a lot of work to go to for a morning meal," Mardina said. She wasn't used to being treated so generously.
"Everybody worked on it," Ayla said. "When I told them I had invited you and thought I'd dig a pit oven, they thought it would be a good time to dig a big roasting pit. They said they planned to do it anyway, but this gave them a reason. I cooked some of the things the way I learned when I was a girl. Try the willow grouse. It's the one I killed with the spear thrower yesterday. But if the taste is not to your liking, please don't hesitate to have something else instead. I learned on our journey that there are many ways of cooking things, and not everyone likes all of them."
"Welcome to the ninth cave, Mardina." It was the first among those who served the mother. Mardina didn't think she had ever spoken to her before, except in unison during a ceremony.
"Greetings, Selendani, who is first," Mardina said, feeling a little nervous to be talking to the huge woman who was sitting on a raised stool.
It was similar to the one she used in the Zelandania Lodge, but it was left at the camp for when she wanted to spend time with her cave.
"And welcome to you, too, Lanadar," the first said.
There was a warmth in her tone when the Danyar spoke to her son that Mardina had never heard from the powerful woman.
"Though I understand you were here yesterday."
"Yes," he said. "Ayla showed me the horses."
"She tells me you can whistle very well," Zelandani said.
"She taught me some bird songs."
"Would you like to show me?"
"If you want. I've been practicing the meadowlark," he said, then proceeded to imitate the beautiful sound.
Everyone turned to look, even his mother and grandmother.
"That's very good, young man," Jondalar said, beaming at the youngster. "It's nearly as good as Ayla's meadowlark."
"We're ready," Proliva called. "Come and eat."
Ayla led the three guests to the pile of bone and wood platters first and urged them to try everything. Then everyone else fell into line. Usually those who shared a lodge had their morning meal together, but this had become the first of what would be many meals that would be shared, not only with their own cave, but with other friends and relatives. There would even be a few occasions when the entire summer meeting would all feast together, but that would involve a great deal of organizing and planning. One of them would be the matrimonial feast. When everyone was through eating, people started leaving for various other activities, but most of them stopped by to say a few words to their guests. Mardina was feeling a little flustered with all the attention, but she also felt a glow of warmth. She couldn't remember ever being treated so well. Proliva came to talk to them, and she said a few words to Mardina and Denoda, then turned to Ayla.
"We'll finish up here, Ayla. I think you have something you want to talk to Mardina about," she said.
"Yes. Would you and Lanadar and Denoda, if she wants, like to take a walk with me?"
"Where are we going?"
Mardina said with a touch of edginess.
"To see some horses," Ayla said.
"Can I come along, Ayla?" Falara said. "If you don't want me to, just go ahead and say so, but I haven't seen the horses for a while."
Ayla smiled.
"Of course you can," she said.
It might actually make it easier to get Mardina to agree to let Lanadar watch them if someone so friendly and unafraid of them was there. She turned to look for the boy and saw him sitting next to Lanoga, who was holding Lorela, and they seemed to be talking easily. Tremida's 2-year boy was sitting on the ground nearby. As they headed in their direction, Mardina asked,
"Who is that girl? Or is she a woman? She seems very young to have a baby that age."
"Too young, for certain. She hasn't even had first rites," Ayla said. "That's her sister, and the other one, the 2-year, is her brother. But as far as the babies are concerned, Lanoga is their mother."
"I don't understand," Mardina said.
"I'm sure you've heard of Larimar. He's the one who makes the barma," Falara said.
"Yes," Mardina said. "Everyone has," Denoda said.
"Then perhaps you've heard of his mate, Tremida. She does nothing but drink the barma he makes and have children that she won't take care of," Falara said, full of derision.
or can't, Ayla said. She can't seem to stop herself from drinking the barma, either. And Larimar is often drunk and just as irresponsible. He doesn't even care about the children of his hearth, Falara said with disgust. Ayla found out that Tremida had lost her milk, and Lenoga was trying to feed Lorela on nothing but mashed-up roots, because that's all she knew how to make. Ayla got several of the new mothers to agree to nurse the baby, but Lenoga is still the one who takes care of her, and all the rest of Tremida's children. Ayla showed her how to make other food that babies can eat, and she's the one who takes Lorela to the other mothers to nurse. She's really an amazing girl, and will be a wonderful mate and mother some day. But who knows if she'll ever find a mate? Larimar and Tremida have the last ranked hearth in our cave. Who would be willing to mate the daughter of that hearth?
Mardina and Denoda stared at the talkative young woman. Most people liked to gossip, but they were not usually so open about the ones who were an embarrassment to their own cave. Denoda's rank had slipped since her daughter gave birth to Lanadar, and her mate had severed the knot. They weren't the lowest, but not far from it. Their cave was much smaller, however. To be the last of such a large cave was a low rank. But even if we were the first ranked, Lanadar will have trouble finding a mate because of his affliction, Denoda thought.
"Would you like to go see some horses, Lanadar?"
Ayla asked as they approached.
"You can come too, Lenoga." "No, I can't. It's Stellona's turn to feed Lorela, and she's getting hungry. I didn't want to give her too much food until after she nurses."
"Maybe another time," Ayla said, smiling affectionately. "Are you ready, Lanadar?"
"Yes," he said. Then he turned to the girl.
"I have to go, Lenoga."
She smiled shyly at him, and he smiled back. As they passed by her lodge, Ayla said,
"Lanadar, will you get that bowl over there? It has some horse food in it, pieces of wild carrot and some grains."
He ran to get it. Ayla noticed that he carried the bowl on his right side, supported against his body with his crippled arm, and she had an unexpected memory of Kreb holding a bowl of red ochre paste against his body, with the arm that had been amputated at the elbow, just before he named her son and accepted him into the clan. It brought a smile of joy and pain. Mardina was watching her and wondered. Denoda had noted her expression, too, and wasn't as shy about mentioning it.
"You looked at Lanadar with such a strange smile," she said.
"He reminds me of someone I used to know," Ayla said. "A man who was missing the lower part of his arm. He had been attacked by a cave bear when he was a child. His grandmother was a healer, and she had to cut it off because it was poisoning his body. He would have died if she hadn't."
"What a terrible thing," Denoda said.
"Yes, it was. He was blinded in one eye, too, by that attack, and his leg was hurt. He had to walk with a stick from then on."
"The poor boy. He had to be taken care of the rest of his life, I suppose," Mardina said.
"No," Ayla said. "He made a valuable contribution to his people."
"How did he manage? What did he do?"
"He became a great man, a Mogur. That's like a Zelindani, and he was recognized as the first. He and his sister were the ones who took care of me after my own family died. He was the man of my hearth, and I loved him very much," Ayla said.
Mardina was looking at her with jaw agape and her eyes open wide. She could hardly believe the woman, but why would someone lie about something like that? As Ayla talked, Denoda became particularly conscious of her unusual accent, but the story made her understand why she seemed to have taken a liking to Lanadar. When she mates, she is going to be related to some very powerful people, and if she likes him, she could help him a lot. This woman might be the best thing that ever happened to the boy, she thought. Lanadar had been listening, too. "Maybe I could learn to hunt," he thought. "Even if I only have one good arm, maybe I could learn to do something besides picking berries." They were approaching a construction that was like a surround, except that it didn't seem particularly sturdy. It was made of long, thin, straight alder and willow poles lashed together in horizontal X's with other poles across the top attached to shorter, somewhat sturdier poles sunk into the ground. Bushes and tree branches already drying out loosely filled in the spaces between. If a herd of bison, for example, or even a large male, 6 feet 6 inches at the top of the hump on his shoulders with long black horns, tried to break out, the enclosure would not have held. Even the horses could likely break it down if they were determined.
"Do you remember how to whistle to call Racer Lanidar?"
Ayla asked.
"Yes, I think so," he said. "Why don't you call him and see if he'll come?" she said.
The boy whistled the loud, piercing call. Very soon the two horses, the mare following the young stallion, appeared from behind some trees that lined the small waterway and came trotting toward them. They stopped at the enclosure fence and watched the humans approaching. Whinny snorted, and Racer whickered at them. Ayla answered with the distinctive whinny that was the sound she had originally named her horse, and both horses neighed back.
"She does know how to make a sound like a horse," Mardina said.
"I told you she could, Mother," Lanidar said.
Wolf raced ahead, easily slipping under the fence. He sat in front of the mare while she dropped her head in what appeared to be a gesture of greeting. Then Wolf approached the young stallion, dropped down on his chest and forepaws, with his hindquarters up in the air in a playful pose, and yipped at Racer. The stallion nickered back. Then they touched noses. Ayla smiled at them as she ducked inside the fence. She hugged the mare around the neck, then turned and stroked the stallion, who was crowding in looking for attention, too.
"I hope you like this surround better than having to wear halters and ropes all the time. I wish I could let you run free, but I don't think it's safe when so many people are out hunting. I've brought some visitors today, and it's important for you to be very cooperative and gentle. I want the boy who whistles to check on you for me, and his mother is protective of him and nervous about you," Ayla said in the language she had invented when she lived alone in the valley.
It was comprised of certain sounds and gestures from the clan, some of the nonsense sounds she and her son had made to each other when he was a baby and they were alone, and certain onomatopoeic sounds she had begun to make in imitation of the animals around her, including horse snorts and whickers. Only she knew what she meant, but she had always used her invented language when she talked to the horses. She doubted if they fully understood, though certain sounds and gestures had meaning for them, since she used them as signals and directions. But they knew it was her way of addressing them, and they responded by paying attention.
"What's she doing?"
Mardina said to Falara.
"She's talking to the horses," Falara said. "She often talks to them like that."
"What is she saying to them?"
Mardina asked.
"You'll have to ask her," Falara said.
"Do they know what she's saying? It doesn't make any sense to me,"
Denota said.
"I don't know, but they seem to listen," Falara said.
Lanidar had crowded up close to the fence and was watching her closely. She really did treat them like friends, more like family, actually, he thought, and they treated her the same way. But he wondered where the enclosure came from. It hadn't been there the day before. When Ayla was through talking to the horses and turned around to face the people, Lanidar asked her,
"Where did the surround come from? It wasn't here yesterday."
Ayla smiled.
"A lot of people got together and built it yesterday afternoon," she said.
When Ayla returned from having a meal with the 19th cave, she mentioned to Joharan after his meeting that she wanted to build an enclosure for the horses and explained why. Joharan stood up on Zelandani's stool and talked about Ayla's desire to create a safe place for the horses. Most of the people who were at the meeting were still there, as well as many people from the 9th cave. Many questions were asked, including how strong it had to be, and several suggestions were made.
Before long, most of them moved up the meadow and pitched in to build the corral. The ones who were not from the Ninth Cave were curious about the horses anyway, and most of those who were didn't want to see the horses accidentally hurt or killed. They were a novelty that brought added distinction to their cave. Ayla was so grateful she didn't know what to say. She thanked them, but didn't think that was near enough, and felt a debt to the Zelandanyi that she didn't know how to repay. Working together brought people closer together, and she felt that she got to know some people better. Joharan had mentioned wanting to include the horses in the hunt, which was planned for the following morning. Both Ayla and Jandalar rode the horses and demonstrated their control of them, which made Joharan's suggestions much more acceptable. If the hunt was successful, the matrimonial would normally take place the next day, but since Dalinar and the Lansadanyi had not yet arrived, they were prepared to wait a few days, though some people were getting anxious. Ayla put halters on the horses and led them out of the enclosure through a gate that Tormodon of the 19th Cave had devised. He dug a hole beside one of the support posts for the base of a pole to which the gate was attached, and used a loop of rope to slip over the top. Rope loops also served as hinges. She was beginning to feel a closer tie to the 19th Cave. When she brought the horses up close, Mardina backed away fast. They were so much bigger up close. Valara immediately stepped into her place.
"I haven't seen the horses nearly as much as I wanted to," she said, petting Winnie's face. "Everyone has been so busy, what with that bison hunt where Chevenar died, and the burial, and getting ready to come. You said once you'd let me have a ride on a horse."
"Would you like to do it now?" Ayla said.
"Could I?"
she said, her eyes glowing with pleasure.
"Let me get a riding blanket for Winnie," Ayla said. "Would you and Lanadar like to give them something to eat while I get it? He has some food they like in that bowl."
"I'm not sure if Lanadar should get so close," Mardina said.
"He's already close, Mardina," Dinota said.
"But she's there."
"Mother, I already fed them once. They know me, and you can see they know Falara."
"They won't hurt him," Ayla said, "and I'm only going over there."
She pointed to an arrangement of stones near the gate. It was a traveler's cairn that Kareja had made for her. Ayla only had to remove a few rocks to reach the space inside where she could keep a few things, like a leather riding blanket. The rocks were overlapped in such a way that rainwater would flow over the top and not seep inside. The leader of the 11th cave showed her how to put them back to keep the inside dry. Similar cairns were placed along several well-used routes with emergency fire-making materials and often a warm cloak inside. Other cairns had dried food inside. Occasionally both would be in one cairn, but the food cairns were broken into more often, and bears, wolverines, or badgers, the most frequent offenders, usually vandalized and scattered everything. Ayla left them with the horses. When she reached the cairn, she glanced back, making it very inconspicuous. Falara and Lanadar were letting the large herbivores eat out of their hands, while Mardina stayed back, acting nervous and looking concerned, and Dinota watched. Ayla walked back and casually tied the riding blanket on Winnie's back. Then she led the mare to a stone.
"Get up on the stone, Falara, then put your leg over her back, and try to find a comfortable seat. You can hang on to her mane. I'll hold Winnie so she won't move," Ayla said.
Falara felt a little clumsy, especially when she recalled how smoothly Ayla mounted the horse. But she managed to get on, then sat there grinning.
"I'm sitting on a horse's back," she said, feeling rather proud of herself.
Ayla noticed that Lanadar was watching her with a yearning look. Later, Ayla thought, let's not press your mother too hard yet.
"Are you ready?" she said.
"Yes, I think so,"
Falara said.
"Just relax. You can hold her mane for support if you want, but you don't have to," Ayla said,
then started off at a walk, leading the horse by the halter, though she knew Winnie would follow her without it. At first, Falara held the mane and sat up stiffly, bouncing with each step the horse made. But after a while, she settled down, began to anticipate the gait, and relax into it. Then she let go of the mane.
"Do you want to try it alone? I'll give you the lead rope." "Do you think I can?"
"You can try it, and if you want to get off, just tell me. When you want Winnie to go faster, lean forward," Ayla explained. "Hug her neck if you want. When you want her to slow down, start to sit up."
"All right. I think I will try," Falara said.
Mardina looked absolutely petrified when Ayla put the lead rope in Falara's hand.
"Go ahead, Winnie," she said, signaling her to go slow.
The horse started walking across the meadow. She had given rides to several people and knew to go easy, especially the first time. When Falara leaned forward a little, Winnie increased her pace, but not by much. She leaned down a little farther, and Winnie shifted into a trot. She was an amazingly smooth riding horse, but the trot jogged Falara a little more than she expected. She quickly sat back up, and Winnie slowed down. After they had gone out a way, Ayla whistled to call her back. Falara got braver and leaned forward again, and this time she stayed with the trot until they returned and stopped. Ayla led the mare to the rock and held her until Falara got down.
"That was wonderful," Falara said,
her face flushed with excitement. Lanadar was smiling at her just because she looked so pleased.
"See, mother," the boy said, "you can ride on the back of these horses. Ayla, why don't you give Mardina and Denoda a demonstration of what they can really do?" Falara said.
Ayla nodded, then quickly and smoothly leaped on the horse, guided her out toward the middle of the meadow at a fast trot, with Racer and Wolf at her heels. She signaled a gallop, and the horse raced at top speed across the field. She made a large circle, then headed back, slowing the horse as they got close, pulled to a stop, threw her leg over the horse, and jumped down. Both women and the boy were wide-eyed.
"Well, now I know why someone would want to ride on the back of a horse," Denoda said. "If I were younger, I'd like to try it."
"How do you have so much control over this animal?" Mardina said. "Is it some kind of magic?"
"No, not at all, Mardina. Anyone could do it with practice."
"What made you decide to ride on a horse? How did you start?" Denoda asked.
"I killed Winnie's dam for food, and only later discovered she was nursing a young filly," Ayla began. "When hyenas came after the foal, I couldn't stand to let them take her. I hate those filthy animals, so I chased them away, and then I realized I would have to take care of her."
She told them about saving the baby horse from hyenas and then raising her, and that because she had, they grew to know each other well.
"One day, I got up on her back, and when she started running, I held on. It was all I could do. When she finally slowed down and I got off, I could hardly believe what I had done. It was like flying with the wind in my face. I couldn't help doing it again. And though at first I had no control, after a while, I learned how to direct her. She goes where I want because she wants to. She's my friend, and I think it pleases her to let me ride."
"Still, it was an unusual thing to do. Didn't anyone object?" Mardina said.
"There was no one to object. I was alone then," Ayla said.
"I would have been afraid to live alone with no other people," Mardina said.
She was full of curiosity and wanted to ask more questions, but before she had the chance, they heard a call and turned to see Jandalar coming.
"They're here," he said. "Dalinar and the Lanzadanyi have arrived."
"Wonderful," Falara said. "I can hardly wait to see them."
Ayla smiled with delight.
"I am also anxious to see them."
She turned back to her visitors.
"We have to go back to camp. The man of Jandalar's hearth has arrived, in time for our matrimonial."
"Of course," Mardina said. "We'll go right away." "Well, I wouldn't mind greeting Dalinar before we leave, Mardina," Denoda said. "I used to know him."
"You should," Jandalar said. "I'm sure he'd be glad to see you."
"And before you go,
I need to ask you if you will allow Lanidar to come and check on the horses for me when I'm busy, Mardina, Ayla said. He doesn't have to do anything except make sure they are all right, and come and get me if he notices anything wrong. I would appreciate it very much. It would be such a relief if I didn't have to worry about them.
When they turned to look, the boy was petting the young stallion and feeding him pieces of wild carrot.
I think you can see they won't hurt him, Ayla said.
Well, I suppose he could, Mardina said.
Oh, Mother, thank you,
Lanidar said, grinning. Mardina had never seen such a pleased and happy expression on his face.
Chapter 28
"Where's that boy of yours, Marthona? The one that everyone says looks just like me. Well, perhaps a little younger,"
said the tall man with long blonde hair tied in a club in back. He held out both hands and smiled warmly in greeting. They knew each other too well for much formality.
"When he saw you coming, he ran to get Ayla,"
Marthona said, taking his hands in hers and leaning forward to rub cheeks. "He may be getting older," she thought, "but he's still handsome and as charming as ever.
They'll be here soon, Dalinar, you can be sure. He's been watching for you since we got here."
"And where's Willemar? I was very sorry to hear about Thonolin. I liked that young man. I want to express my sadness to you both," he said.
"Thank you, Dalinar," Marthona said. "Willemar is at the main camp, talking to some people about a trading mission. The news about Thonolin was especially hard on him. He always believed the son of his hearth would return. In all honesty, I doubted that either of them would. When I first saw Jondalar, for a moment, I thought it was you. I could hardly believe my son had come home. And what surprises he's brought back, not the least of which is Ayla and her animals."
"Yes, they are a shock. You knew they stopped off for a visit on their way here," said the woman at his side.
Marthona turned to the woman. Dalinar's mate was the most unusual person Marthona or any of the Zelandanyi had ever seen. She was tiny, especially in comparison with her mate. If he held his arm out, she could walk beneath it without bending. Her straight, long hair, pulled back in a bun, was as glossy and black as a raven's wing, though streaks of gray lightened the sides. But the most arresting aspect was her face. It was round, with a little snub of a nose, high, wide cheekbones, and dark eyes that appeared slanted because of the epicanthic fold of her eyelids. Her skin was fair, perhaps a shade darker than her mate's, though as the summer progressed, both their faces would darken from the sun.
"Yes, they told us you planned to come to the summer meeting," Marthona said after she had greeted the woman. "I understand Joplea will be mated, too. You've arrived just in time, Jerrica. All the women who are mating, along with their mothers, are supposed to meet with the Zelandanya this afternoon. I am going with Ayla, since her own mother isn't here to go. If you're not too tired, you and Joplea should come."
"I think we can make it, Marthona," Jerrica said. "Do we have time to put up our lodges first?"
"I don't see why not. Everyone will help," Joharan said. "If you don't mind setting up here next to us."
"And you won't have to do any cooking. We had guests for a morning meal and have plenty left over," Proliva said.
"We'll be glad to camp beside the ninth cave," Dalinar said. "But what made you decide to pick this place? You usually like to be in the thick of things, Joharan." "By the time we arrived, all the best places in the main camp were taken, especially for a cave as big as ours, and we didn't want to be crowded. We looked around and found this. And I like it better," Joharan said. "See those trees? That's just the beginning of a good-sized grove with plenty of firewood. This creek starts up there, too, in a clear spring. Long after everyone else's water is muddy and churned up, we'll still have good water. And there's a nice pool. Jondalar and Ayla like it here, too. There's space for the horses. We made a place for them upstream. That's where Ayla went with her guests. She's the one who invited them." "Who are they?"
Dalinar asked. He couldn't help but be curious about whom Ayla would invite.
Do you remember that woman from the 19th cave who gave birth to the boy with the deformed arm? Mardina? Her mother is Denoda, Marthona said.
Yes, I do,
Dalinar said. The boy, Lanadar, can now count almost 12 years, she said. I'm still not sure how it came about, but I think he came up here to get away from all the people and probably some teasing from the other boys. I guess someone told him there were horses here. Everyone is interested in them, of course, and the boy is no exception. Somehow, Ayla met him and decided to ask him to keep an eye on the horses for her. She's concerned that with all the people here, someone, not realizing how special they are, might try to hunt them. It would be easy. They don't run away.
That's true, Dalinar said. Too bad we can't make all animals that docile.
Ayla didn't think that the boy's mother might object, but it seems she's very protective, Marthona said. She won't even let him learn to hunt, or doesn't think he can. So Ayla invited the boy and his mother and grandmother here to see the horses, to try to convince her that they won't hurt him. And only one good arm or not, she's also decided that she's going to teach him to use Jondalar's new spear thrower.
She does have a mind of her own, Jerrica said.
I noticed that, but she's not unkind.
No, she's not, and she's not afraid to stand up for herself or to speak up for others, Proliva said.
Here they come, Joharan said.
They saw a group of people and a wolf coming toward them, Jondalar in the lead, his sister close behind. They had all been walking at the pace of the slowest, but when he saw Dalinar and the others, Jondalar rushed ahead. The man of his hearth came toward him. They grabbed hands, then let go and hugged each other. The older man put his arm around the shoulders of the younger man as they walked back side by side. The similarity between the two men was uncanny. They could have been the same man at two different stages of his life. The older one was a tad thicker at the waist, his hair a little thinner on top, but the face was the same, though the brow of the younger was not as deeply etched, and the jowls of the older were getting soft. They matched each other in height, walked with the same step, and moved the same way. Even their eyes were the same vivid shade of glacier blue.
There is no doubt which man's spirit was chosen when the mother created him, Mardina said quietly to her mother, nodding her head at Jondalar as the visitors neared the camp.
Lanadar saw Lanoga and went to talk to her.
Dalinar looked just like him when he was young, and he hasn't changed much,
Denoda said.
He's still a most handsome man.
Mardina was watching with great interest as Ayla and Wolf were greeted by the new arrivals. It was obvious they all knew each other, but she couldn't help but stare at some of the people. The black-haired, tiny woman with a strange face seemed to be with the tall, blonde, older man who resembled Jondalar, perhaps as his mate.
"How do you know him, Mother?" Mardina said. "He was the man at my first rites,"
Denoda said.
"Afterward, I begged the mother to bless me with the spirit of his child."
"Mother, you know that's too soon for a woman to have a baby," Mardina said.
"I didn't care," Denoda said. "I knew that sometimes a young woman got pregnant soon after first rites, when she was finally a full woman and able to take in a man's spirit. I hoped it would make him pay more attention to me if he thought I was carrying a child of his spirit." "You know a man is not allowed to get close to a woman he opens for at least a year after first rites, Mother."
Mardina was almost shocked at her mother's confession. She had never talked like that to her before.
"I know, and he never tried to, though he didn't avoid me and was always kind when we saw each other. But I wanted more than that. For a long time I couldn't think of anyone but him,"
Denoda said.
"Then I met the man of your hearth. My greatest sorrow in life was that he died so young. I would have liked more children, but the mother chose not to give me more, and it was probably for the best. Taking care of you by myself was hard enough. I didn't even have a mother to assist me, although some women from